your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. In the next two segments, we are joined by Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail side, he writes the In the Know Trader, as well as a relatively newer piece called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the overall S&P. And Rick, we're going to start with the U.S. equity markets, because we had you back on about a month ago and you were sharing with your clients your outlook for the markets to broadly move sideways for really Q4. And quite frankly, we had a little bit of a dip in the markets and then about a 5% sell-off, and then some buying came back in. It still seems like that buy the dip mentality is on or still in traders' minds. However, we reached those all-time highs and in a way have reversed. Now, we just reversed a little bit on Friday, but still it doesn't seem like there's that same momentum to the upside. Also not huge momentum to the downside. So Rick, where does that leave us for the U.S. equity markets right now?
Well, Corey, thanks for having me. I think it leaves us kind of where I thought we'd be a month ago, which is fairly sideways. You're right. There's some, you know, we've had a quick move up in the last 2 weeks, but all we've done is we made an incremental new high yesterday or even this morning. I think Friday morning made a slight new high. And it's pulled back, and you know, we're towards the upper part of the range. And I said that if we made new highs, I don't think we'd get much more than a percent or two above what were the prior all-time highs, such that the S&P, you know, okay, so maybe you get to 4,600, 4,650, let's say best case. That's roughly 2% above the what was the all-time high from early September. And on the downside, I don't see that we're likely going to make any material move to the downside. We got down to just under 4,300 before rebounding, basically at the beginning, since the beginning of October. So, you know, the market made its high at the beginning of September, sold down for the month of September. Now we've rallied the entire month of October, right back to those highs. I kind of think we're going to be somewhat in this sideways fashion. And for the next couple months, and what it's going to do is frustrate those who have firmly gone in the camps of some of these major Wall Street firms. So I think 5 or 6 tier one firms had called for a 15 to 20% decline, and we got 5.5% in the S&P, and it's come right back up. You've got a couple of firms, including, I think, Goldman and maybe Bank of Montreal or something, where you have really bullish strategists who still think we're going out this year at 4,700. I don't do a year-end type target, but I'm just going to pick that we're somewhere in between. I don't know if I'll self-impose a number on me. I'll just pick the middle of the range and say, 4,400. 4,500, somewhere in there, which is going to be somewhat sideways, because the issues that plagued the market a month ago are not gone. So we sold off, and then, you know, all of a sudden people thought that, all right, well, the Fed's not going to do their tapering as quickly, and now they're giving us a little more clarity on it. But I don't think things are all that good that we're going to just keep pushing higher here. So I think the market still has issues to deal with. We're going into, look, we're late October at this point, based on history and what are the medical professionals tell us, the COVID virus should get worse as we enter winter. You know, the heat of the summer is over, and the heat helps kill viruses. And, you know, it's just very common to get viruses get worse as you get closer to and into the winter. So we still have that to deal with. We have high energy prices to deal with. We have supply chain issues to deal with. We have companies telling us that, you know, they're not able to get their hands on the goods. There's shipping containers sitting outside of ports that can't get into ports. That means those shipping containers also can't get back to, let's say, China and other places that they originated from to bring new product over. So I think there's still some general macro issues. You have higher interest rates to deal with. Technology stocks don't usually do as well as interest rates move up. And, you know, we're certainly nearer the higher level of rates for the year than we are towards the lower end. The U.S. 10-year is at 1.65% or so, with a high this year at 1.76. But just, you know, over the summer, we got down to 1.11. So we're near the higher end. There's just things that the market needs to contend with. And I kind of think we're going to be a little mishmashy for a few months. And that's not a bad thing in an ongoing bull market, is to go sideways for a little bit. It just kind of cleans out the ranks a little in either direction. And you got to be a confirmed bull over longer periods to hold on. Otherwise, you know, tactical traders are doing decently now. But if you get married to the idea that the market's going to sell off 20% or that it's going to rally another 10% by year's end, I think you're going to be very disappointed. So that's my general call, is somewhat sideways action.
Well, Rick, do you think earnings season will play a part here in this continual tug of war between the bulls and the bears? Because we've seen some companies kind of get pummeled if they miss their guidance. And if people are expecting things to break out to a high new level, could that be something that puts a lid on it? Or could some other companies, as they report, lead the sector higher? What's your outlook as far as we're in the middle of earnings
season?
Well,
look, earnings are what drive the markets over time. They're the biggest force behind price moving over time. It's kind of irrelevant for traders unless they're literally playing an immediate earnings release. But, you know, earnings are very important. As is the Fed. And earnings have started off decently, but as you say, Chad, if you miss, I mean, look at what, you know, Snap was down 30% at one point right after the bell yesterday after they released earnings. And last I looked, I don't know, maybe they're only down like 22% or something like that now. But, you know, that's a plunking. If you're a portfolio manager and in a single day you're down over 20%, of course, there's only one name in your portfolio, but, you know, that's a hit. We saw IBM miss and drop, 8 to 10%. What else came out? You know, Intel got whacked. So you gotta match your numbers. And so many stocks do better than the numbers because analysts are almost always too conservative, you know, in their estimates. And that's kind of just a phenomenon on the sell side, where you'd rather be under, and you know, you'd rather put out numbers that are kind of lower than you might think, because on a consensus basis, then it's easier to beat the consensus for the company, to beat the consensus number, and then have their stocks move higher. They're usually conservative, and yet you've got these surprise. In fact, even if I remember correctly, when I saw this yesterday and Snap missed, some of the business TV networks had on analysts from a variety of different sell side firms who cover Snap, and they all defended the name as saying this is a big overreaction and this is a great buying opportunity and da 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 da. When all of them say the same thing, I kind of think like, no, they're all trapped in being too bullish. So I'm not sure this recoups this type of decline anytime soon. But I even personally put in a bid for it, but it was worse than even 30% down. So, you know, it was even lower than that. So I figured, you know, let's see if there's some real pain, which we're not seeing at least today, relative to where it had been yesterday after the close. But I'm in no rush here. I like to take advantage and try to buy things when people just can't take the pain anymore of holding it from higher prices. So look, earnings are big. Generally, they've been okay, but you don't want to be on the wrong side of a miss.
So Rick, in summary then, before we leave these U.S. markets, what matters the most in your eyes? Is it the Fed and their upcoming meeting early November? It keeps getting talked about. Is it COVID and the potential spike in cases, or at least the government's reaction to those spike in cases? Or is it even energy prices or economic data? Both have also moved markets in the near term.
Can I answer yes? I think those issues are the predominant key issues, and it's not necessarily one greater than the other right now. the Fed has so telegraphed what they're doing, although it's more recent that they've gotten clear. And I think Chairman Powell also is going to be a lot more reticent in his previous comments of transitory inflation. I think the marketplace has known for quite some time and has positioned themselves for quite some time that inflation is not going to be transitory. And I don't know if Chairman Powell was just kind of trying to be like a little double talk with like Greenspan-esque and not necessarily come out and say, you know, look, he's not in a position where he could come out and say, yeah, inflation is here and it's going to get a heck of a lot worse, folks. So prepare for it. You know, he can't say it that way. So I don't necessarily agree that he had chosen terms transitory unless he really believed it and now is starting to change his mind. But investors are positioned, and even more so over the last week, that it's not going to be transitory. There are more people being bearish bonds than bullish bonds, which makes sense after a 30-year bull market that is clearly now over. And I'm hard-pressed to think that yields in the U.S., you know, the 10-year yield gets under 1% again. And after 30 years of having moved significantly lower, the base is building for rates to go higher. And I'm not talking about having a 5 or 7% U.S. 10-year, but in the next few years, is there any reason we couldn't get to 2.5%, even 3 to 3.5%? No, not at all. Is there any reason we'd likely get to test the lows that we saw from summer 2020 down at, you know, 40 basis points? I don't think there's anything left in the pot to make rates go there anymore. So the recent low was at, I think it was 1.11%. Could something happen that we've been too oversold bonds near term and rates, you know, pull back down and bond prices go back up? Possibly, but at this point, I don't think so. And for the larger picture of what's going on, I think it just makes more sense to think that if you're playing the odds of bond movement going forward over the next several years, the likelihood is that yields move up, not that yields move down.
I was going to ask you about that, Rick, because, you know, if the yields are stuck in, let's say, between 1 and 2% right now, it's really not much when you consider the CPI inflation's around 5%, and even the TIPS is more than that. So people that are buying U.S. Treasuries for a return, you know, generalist investors, they're not going to be that excited about the returns in bonds because you're getting eroded by inflation. So what sectors are you interested in? Where do you think some of that money may rotate into?
So if you finally get the end of the bull market that started in, you know, let's just call it 1980, when yields were, I don't know, what, on the 10-year, 15%, give or take, something like that, I think that the money, as individual investors walk away from the bond market and have cash, they're either going to sit with the cash, of which some will probably make its way into the equity market. Some will probably make its way into crypto as crypto gets marketed better. And, you know, you get the price of this crazy thing called Bitcoin that, you know, just made another all-time high a few days ago before giving back, I don't know, $7,000 or something in the last few days. It's so those are some places. And thinking as far as traditional stuff, maybe gold gets a little, although gold's just been a huge disappointment. It's basically the only major commodity that has not rallied. You know, gold and silver are down on the year. And you look at the commodity index and it's up nicely and surging, and you know, the precious metals are not partaking. So maybe a little of it trickles, you know, back into the commodity space. I think energy, because of its such a long-term underperformance, is probably a very under-owned sector of the stock market. So I think there's probably going to be investment in that area, both in the stocks, but in general, I think kind of energy gets back infrastructure, investment, and you know, you got clean energy that's all becoming a part of the new way of looking at energy. And I'm not saying that conventional old-time energy is gone, but it's you know, slowly being taken away as the public is asking for and kind of demanding cleaner ways. So when you have companies like Ford saying that you know, they're ultimately going full electric cars, and other ones following suit, it's there's still all different new things that are going to get developed in the energy area. So that's a place I think that is probably worthy of investing in, kind of finally. So if you look at the XLE versus the spiders, 20-year picture, the only sector of the 11 sectors you're going to lose money in is energy. I mean, you've actually lost money in a 20-year investment. So if you go back to 2000 to now, if you were invested in the XLE, you've lost money. I think finally, energy is a place that it likely bottomed, and that it is a place that is going to get investment over time. So that's a few places that I think that some of the bond money is going to come out of. And look, bonds are going to always be needed to be owned by pension plans, by insurance companies, by corporations that need to have a guaranteed stream that they know is fixed, so that they can do their proper treasury workings to know what's coming in, what's going out, and at least guarantee a certain amount with a fixed stream. But for the everyday investor, the moms and pops, you know, across America, owning, locking yourself in to get one point, you know, now it's, let's say, one, well, round number is 1.7%, and locking that for 10 years when inflation is running higher than that, when the chances are that bond prices move down as being greater than bond prices moving up, such that you're going to lose money holding that bond. If you need to sell it, especially if you need to sell it before it matures, you know, you're guaranteed the price at maturity, but in between, if yields move higher, your bond price goes down. I don't think there's a huge reason to be owning bonds. And I've said that whether it's 1.7 or even at 1%, it's just, there's a time and place for everything. So I think also the standard 60-40 formula that has worked on Wall Street for so long, put people basically 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. And as they get older, you know, shift that more into bonds and less to stocks. I think that formula is going out the window, because, you know, owning bonds just isn't going to do people a heck of a lot of good.
Well, it's been a really historic run that bonds went on, right? And one could say there were a lot of other hands in that run, too, with what the central banks were doing. But, Rick, I want to revisit one of your comments there on gold and silver as being really the only commodity, or one of the only commodities, that is down this year. And that's in an environment, too, where we are seeing higher inflation, let's say negative real interest rates. There are still some worries in the world and globally. That being said, we also seem to be going through an economic recovery. Why has gold and silver lagged so much? And is this part of a bigger picture? We almost need to think of gold and silver in a different way. Is that possible?
Well, so one is that gold used to be, you know, you put some gold, a little bit of your money into gold as a hedge against inflation, as a non-correlated asset. And in theory, there's still reasons to think that way. But a few years back, this thing called crypto showed up, and you actually did decently in gold up until, I guess, it peaked August of last summer. So up until a year ago, you know, long-term holders have done well. And even though gold gave back a few hundred dollars, right now it's kind of in the middle of the range since it peaked at just shy of 2,100. Right now it's about 1,800. And so gold really has some competition in kind of the alternative asset space, in the hard asset space. Cryptos have been on fire. So, you know, anybody who bought cryptos is making money and almost easily doing it, as long as you didn't have the worst of timings. So if you just held for 6 months, you probably made money. I'm not sure if crypto had more than a 6-month decline And it's had some nasty ones along the way, but, you know, they don't last much more than 6 months or so, give or take. So gold has some competition, and inflation was low up until recently. So gold wasn't giving you a heck of a lot that way as being an inflation hedge. You didn't need it because there was no inflation. Now we're seeing some inflation, but people have been turned off by the fact that gold's done nothing this year, and in a year that the S&P is up nicely, that crypto's up very nicely. So, but, you know, part of, and don't forget too, the dollar has basically been up the bulk of this year. If you look at it year to date, the dollar bottomed the first week of 2021. So the dollar's been up, and only a week or two ago, it made its high for the year. So a rallying dollar is bearish for gold because gold is priced in U.S. dollars. So if you don't live in the U.S., anywhere else you're buying gold, you're essentially, in theory, buying it versus a U.S. dollar because you need to buy dollars to buy gold. And it's the type of thing that because the dollars move higher, it makes gold more expensive, and therefore that's a drag on the price of gold. There's just higher interest rates is a drag on the price of gold. Because now it's an alternative, you know, getting yield versus, you have to remember, gold yields nothing. It has no value other than what human beings have assigned to it. And there's no dividend when you hold, you know, when you hold gold bars, there's no dividend. When you own gold, there's just no dividend. So there's other things that give you a return. As interest rates go higher, people say, I can, you know, lock in some money and get something for my cash, whereas gold, the only way I'm going to make money in gold is if the price of gold goes higher. There's no other incentive. Plenty of people buy stocks for their dividends, and they're very happy to get paid a 4 or 5% dividend, even if the stock goes nowhere. They've made 4 or 5% a year just from that dividend check. So gold has a lot of things that don't work for it. But the long-term fundamentals for gold are actually still there. There's still, you know, all the problems with growing debt that countries have on a global basis, and that is not good for any local currency, whether it's U.S. dollars or euros or any other currency. So, I think people are looking at crypto as, you know, an alternative currency that theoretically has good fundamentals, given the limit of how many Bitcoins can be, if we want to use Bitcoin as the example, because it's the largest, most liquid, because there's a limit to how many, you know, Bitcoins can ever be mined. So it's very different than a U.S. dollar that a treasury can just print more or a central bank can just print more. And it's really comes down to, I think, that gold has competition finally.
That's a very good point to wrap it up, because gold does have competition, and that competition has also captured the attention of the younger generation that has, much more so just in the last couple of years, truly entered this market. Rick, it's always great having you on the show. And look, some very interesting comments regarding where the U.S. markets could go for the rest of this year, which might be nowhere, and where that money will rotate out of bonds when that continues to pick up steam, because it does seem like, and this is a global trend, yields are moving higher, and that means money is rotating out of the bond market, not just in the U.S. Rick, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thank you for taking some time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and everybody, thank you for tuning in. Please keep the emails coming. Fleck@kereport.com and Shad@kereport.com. Please go back through our website over that last week and listen to all of the interviews and company updates that we release. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.